are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast this week is Kavneet Sahani from Dasra, a leading strategic philanthropy foundation focused on creating large-scale social change in India. At Dasra, she spearheads the JIDAI initiative and also leads on Dasra's social impact program. Good morning, Kavneet. It's wonderful to have you as a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today. Thank you for being here and making time.
Thank you, Sudha. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm so delighted that you actually are interested in learning a bit more about my journey and the work that we do at Dasra around diversity and inclusion. So thank you for having me.
Let's start with a quick introduction to who you are and what you do.
So I work as an associate director at Dasra, and my role primarily is to design and implement capacity building programs for nonprofits and other stakeholders in the sector. You may know this, but Dasra was formed on the basis that there is a lot of funding, a lot of focus that goes on supporting programs on ground, but very little focus on building stronger institutions like we often do in the corporate world. So my role, my journey at Dasra has been very old. I've spent close to 11 years at Dasra now. And most of my time goes in building, designing programs, which will help nonprofit leaders look through their own leadership journeys, become better leaders, but also strengthen their teams, their organization. In the last few years, with a lot of chatter happening on diversity and inclusion, I also have had the opportunity to dive a little bit deeper and understand, beginning from who I am, what is my identity, how does that bring the privilege that I carry. And even at Dasra, I've had the opportunity to anchor some of the diversity and inclusion efforts. So that's a little bit about me professionally. I'm a mother, I like to call that out, of a seven-year-old. He keeps me on my toes and kind of teaches me new lessons every day, if I can put it out there. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing. So like you said, you didn't start off in the social sector. If you were not at Dasra, what would you be doing? Have you thought of it? Do you think about it sometimes?
Yeah, I was at the crossroad and there was this dilemma back in 2013-14 when I joined Dasra, where on one side I had to pick this job at Dasra and the other side I had an offer from Johnson & Johnson. So it was either the corporate world or the development sector. And I'll be honest, I did give it a thorough thought at that point of time, because of course, if you enter the corporate world, you get a better salary. As a starting point, you have a lot of other incentives. There is a clear career path that you're moving ahead on. At the same time, I think my passion lied in the development space. And I really wanted to contribute my skills, my experience to the society. And that's where I picked Dasra. But wherever I would have been, if not Dasra, Johnson & Johnson, any corporate job, I think I would still be doing the very same thing, engaging with stakeholders, working on diversity and inclusion, because my background was in human resources.
That's so interesting. So you are passion-led and you knew very clearly where you want to go and how you want to use your skills. How important, Kavneet, is your identity to you? And what are the experiences that have shaped you and influenced the work that you do today? Because we are also confused about our identities, like, who am I at the end of the day? Most of us tend to be identified by our designation and the place where we work with.
Such an interesting question, Sudha. And I see it in a way that there is a perception or there is a way in which the world identifies you. And then there are certain things that you identify very closely with your own personality, with your work, with your personal family life. And to the world. Of course, I would say I have the privilege to be an able-bodied woman, married woman, born in a upper middle class family, had the privilege of finishing a double master's and supported by my parents. So I think I do acknowledge the privileges that I've had while growing up. But at the same time, I also always try to not negate the challenges that I have had, whether it is around the socioeconomic challenges of being in a family where I was the first girl to not get married at the age of 22, where I was the girl who was like, I want to do a master's, but I don't want to do a BA, which is apparently the best way for me to settle down in life and in my career, where I was the one who said, okay, if you don't want to sponsor my MBA, I will take an education loan and I will go ahead and I'm ready to take the risk and the responsibility of the repercussions that come along. So I've also had my own set of challenges, whether it was around seeing the financial difficulties, parents and me not getting on the same page around when to settle and what's best for me in my life. But I think what's always stayed with me are some values that I identify myself with. I am very inspired by the preachings of Guru Nanak Dev Ji, and I follow Sikhism as a religion, but I think more than any of the gurus, any of the teachings, I'm very influenced by the teachings of Guru Nanak, and he has spoken a lot about being kind to others, not discriminating, right? Just believing in the oneness of God, but also the oneness of human beings. So I think those are some of the values I really identify with and hold very closely.
That's so good to hear. It gives a holistic view into who you are, your spirituality and faith that often sort of grounds us and is our North Star and guides us in making decisions in life. Tell us about your journey at Dasra, internal to DEI as strategic imperative. Because I don't think for the social sector, it has been a big priority. What are the drivers? Why is it that the social sector really needs to sort of get started and get going very quickly on this journey?
Yeah. So Dasra was formed in 1999. We've been in existence for 25 years. And I think some principles that have stayed at the very core of whatever programs we build, whatever path, new strategies that might have come along. We've always want and we always try to keep the communities, the vulnerable communities that we serve at the center of everything we do.
Yeah.
So that has been like the core right from the beginning as to how can we think and how any program, any activity, anything that we do, any action taken at Dasra, how is it influencing these communities positively? I think that has been one of the very, I would say, strategic drivers for us to do what we do today in the field of D&I. And if you have to go back, D&I was not a buzzword, either in the corporate or in the social sector. Back in 2008, Dasra was one of the leaders in the sector who said that we'll pick on a bit of audiences or target groups or communities that nobody else is serving or focusing or highlighting. So adolescent girls, for example, we started with few research reports that we did on adolescent girls or the condition of young women. Till date, we have like 25 plus research reports that we've published focusing on girls, women in the sectors of education, nutrition, water and sanitation. And it was in 2013 that we actually built the first collaborative that was focused on adolescents, specifically girls. So in my mind, when I look at our journey around D&I, it's not new. It's something which is very inbuilt in our own strategy, in our own vision that we have for the organization. But I think it was back in 2019-20 where we were reflecting on where we are in terms of the organization demographics. Is there enough representation of the different strata that India kind of has? And that's when we realized that we are an organization with 70% of women, and an equal percentage, around 67-70% of women also in the leadership positions in the organization. We decided that let's move beyond just gender. Let's also look at other aspects of diversity, whether it's caste, whether it's disability, gender and sexual orientation. We've then kind of moved ourselves, not just looking as women as one of the demographics, but also looking at other aspects that are so inbuilt in the society that we have. And since then, we've done two demographic surveys, and we continue to do that once in 2 years, so that it gives us a sense and a pulse check of which are the underrepresented groups in the organization, and so that our hiring and our recruitment strategies focus on that. But also, we try to dive deeper into understanding how are the employees feeling. Are they able to bring their authentic selves to work or not? And these pulse checks or employee surveys, it kind of forms the vision for us on what next do we do on JEDI. So I think one thing which I just would like to highlight is that for us, it is a little bit around how can D&I be a lever for us to do what we do well. And there has been a lot of conversations with the leadership here, where we sat down for 2 days straight and just spoken about, do you think that as an organization we need more diverse talent? How would it help us meeting our vision? How does that contribute to the goals that we have set for ourselves? Are we ready as an organization to take this up? Are we ready to perhaps slow down our pace of work, perhaps open more ways of doing things, not just sticking to the ways that we might have been following for years at Dasra?
So clearly, externally, you have looked at marginalized communities. And internally, when you have started doing that sense check on what the makeup of Dasra is like, you're looking again at excluded groups or communities and seeing how you can increase representation and, of course, belonging. But why is this a necessity today? Is it just because Dasra believes that this is the way we should operate, or are there bigger drivers or imperatives?
So after the first demographic survey that we did, we were left with a few questions. And these were very honest questions that we put out to the leadership and to the D&I committee, which said that, what does D&I mean to us at Dasra? Why do we need to go on this path? We really have to move on this path, or is it fine? Because Dasra as an organization is doing fine, and will it be of a value add? Do you see it as a strategic lever? And two things, Sudha, that came out very clearly for us, which has been pushing us to move ahead on this journey. One, we ourselves, not just by the research that exists today and the data points that we have, but by our own experiences, we realized by having diverse perspectives, by having people who have different ways of solving things, we are able to innovate and are actually to build programs that we would have not built otherwise. So that was a learned lesson for us. And it was something that we weren't just saying because we read a research report say this, but we had live examples at Dasra where we saw this happening. And the second piece, I mean, India's social fabric is woven with a lot of layers of caste, class, gender, religion. And for us, equity is the core belief, right? It's like, again, the center of our work. And for us to bring any change, we have to solve for these structural inequities that exist in the society. And for that reason, if we have to make a change in the lives of the marginalized group, we need to start internally, need to have them become part of the work that we're trying to do for them. So it's a bit of like, it would be ironical if we're saying, oh, we want to break those inequities, but we don't start
at home.
So
I started the last question also speaking about the sector and the poor track record that it has on DEI or equity, inclusion, representation. One would assume that this would not be the case. Please, could you share your insights on what the barriers are for the social sector to be more inclusive? I mean, if you look at the statistics and if you look at just a couple of the big social sector organizations and you look at their leadership or their boards, they're clearly not representative, right? And just having lots of women in an organization doesn't mean anything. It doesn't show that you're inclusive or equitable unless everyone has a path to forge ahead in the organization. What would you say are the barriers for this sector to moving in that direction? I think from my perspective, it is they feel that they do a lot of stuff already because they're working externally with marginalized communities.
Yeah, I think a few things, right? One, I think first and foremost, we need to understand that the development sector is also part of what the India social fabric has, right? So it will definitely be a reflection of what is happening in India, the complexities, the challenges. So the same social fabric who have these unconscious biases, who have these, you know, ingrained understanding of the context of the society. And so we are all eventually part of the same social fabric, and the challenges still remain the same. But I think first and foremost, we also need to acknowledge and understand that the development sector is way behind in terms of the resources we have, the availability of resources we have as compared to any other sector. The intent here of every organization, every not-for-profit organization, is to not focus on profit, but it's to focus on bringing that change. Unfortunately, India continues to be way behind as compared to its other countries like US, UK, where philanthropy is way ahead on the journey and people are still giving a lot more as compared to India. I think the resource crunch is a big factor, I feel, because if you have limited resources, it's logical that you will end up prioritizing the programs on ground. You will look more external versus looking internal, and that comes to you only once you have reached a stage in the organization journey where it's not a hand-to-mouth situation, or it's you have set the organization on a path that you feel comfortable for the next 5 years on where the organization is going. I think the second thing is that, and funds is one, but also talent, right? There is not enough talent that's coming to the sector. And I have personally seen this change in the last 5 to 7 years. Now we get to see people who are picking social sector as a choice. And there are also a lot of myths and assumptions that, oh, you didn't get a job elsewhere, so you're joining, or you're a woman, that's why you just are picking this as a hobby. So there are still these stereotypes and assumptions that exist in our society, which also act as a barrier for talent to come in. I think those two, to me, are two of the very important things that we need to keep in mind. But apart from that, I think there is a lot of scope, and I will not pull back on saying this, that we need to, in the sector, work more on the leadership commitment, right? There has to be very clear role models that women have to see. And there has to be tracking and accountability. There has to be certain mechanisms, governance mechanisms in place that will hold the organization accountable on internal D&I aspects as well. And thinking a little bit more of platforms. Right now, we do not have enough platforms where the underrepresented groups can connect with each other, can actually gain perspectives from each other and build the confidence in their own abilities. I think women, for example, I remember when I go back, when I started my career, every review, I used to be told, you need to be more assertive. You need to believe in yourself. And I agree, because as women, we are taught to not contribute to a decision that is being made at home. We're not. We're just told this is the decision. And when suddenly at work, I come to an organization that's empowering me and saying that, okay, you take the decision, I am getting cold feet, because I'm like, oh, I have never done this. Are you sure you want me to take the decision? I will do the research. I will give you the options. But I don't want to take that burden of making the decision, right? So I think we need to build those platforms for underrepresented communities to get that confidence. Even a promotion practices need to become more inclusive for returning mothers, especially. And as a returning mother at Dasara, I feel I was very blessed and lucky to not face that I was excluded from the promotion process or I was discriminated. But I really wish that more organizations come forward and ensure that the hiring and the promotion practices are more inclusive.
Yeah, I think you've articulated so many of the challenges, especially around the resource crunch and funding. The manner in which the social sector is funded by external funding agencies, because they don't want to see their funds utilized internally. They want to see disbursement of funds just externally. And so that, I guess, is another elephant in the room that needs a discussion. More of that needs to happen. So you've just spoken about women and how challenging they find to make decisions because they've traditionally not been taught to make decisions or they're not empowered to make their own decisions. Since the past couple of years that I've been working again back in India and speaking to a lot of people, not just in the social sector, in the private sector, I see that there's a lot of pushback on initiatives that are focused solely on women, right? Because you know, people say, oh, let's not do this. There is a lot of sensitivity around it. And the sensitivity is that the men around will feel sensitive about it. And we know from data and statistics that the number of women in leadership positions is not increasing. You know, as Dasra, that India, over the last decade, labor force participation of women has been dropping in spite of more and more women getting educated, right? So do you have any advice on what organizations can do to handle or address this tension that exists? Because that's a very real thing. Currently, too, I'm working on something and they wanted me to create a solution that doesn't specify women, but is meant for women.
Yeah, I hear what you say. I think there's also a need for us to understand some of the causes, just to throw a little bit more light on why is it that there is a lack of women getting more into the workforce, etc. See, early marriage, for example, is one of the big causes that also disrupts career opportunities for girls. Each year, 1.5 million girls under the age of 18 get married in India.
Yeah.
There are so many power imbalances that exist, right from family to school to an office workplace environment. And nobody even talks about the extra workload that the women have to face. So Indian women between the age group of 25 to say 40, 45 years spend 8.5 hours doing household and caregiving responsibilities. Whereas men, so that do you have a guess? Like, do you think how much would the men be spending?
Half an hour.
Less than, you're right, less than an hour. I mean, you also need to understand the burden that women are given by the society and they carry. And I mean, that's the whole idea of building inclusive workspaces where you're also trying to help people stay authentic, right? So suddenly it's not like at home, I have 10 things and suddenly I come and I just kind of pretend to be somebody who's just focusing on work. No, you just can't make that disconnect, right? There always is that burden that a woman would carry from her home to office and from office back to home. So how much ever we talk about the work-life balance and all those things, our lives, I mean, from at least my personal experience and what I've seen my women colleagues face, is it's all intertwined. And in this scenario, I think every stakeholder has to play a role. It has to start back homes with husbands, with mother-in-laws, with mothers and fathers, with children supporting. But also, I think at a workplace, it is now a requirement. It's not an add-on feature, right? It's not like it's good to have. I think if you want your goals to be met effectively, if you want to build in that efficiency, if you want to progress on your organization's mission, I think it's necessary for us to build an inclusive culture where women, or for that matter, any other role, can be their true selves. I'll give you an example. Just 2 weeks back, we had an office retreat. Yeah. My husband was traveling. He was supposed to be out of country for 10 days. And I was supposed to deliver a couple of sessions at retreat. Now, there's this dilemma, right? What do you prioritize? You have to be home to your seven-year-old. You leave him with a nanny. Will he be able to stay? You have that mother guilt going on. Then you also have feeling guilty that, oh, I need to be with my team. This is my time to build that rapport with my team. And they need to see you be there. I was like, oh my God, this is like crazy, right? What do I do? But it is practices like this where I was asked to bring my child to the retreat. And I took my seven-year-old and he had a fabulous time. I think these are just some very practical examples of creating that inclusive culture in the organization where you don't have to make a choice. You can pick both. You are given a platform and opportunities, a culture and environment where you're not being judged. You're not being judged, but you're being given opportunities and a platform to just play different roles.
Absolutely.
That you have for life, right? So you be a mother, you also be a leader in the organization, you also be whatever role that you have to play. So I think there is this need for organizations to be more empathetic, be more kind, be more open-minded, and leave behind any judgments. Because somebody who's been working in the field of D&I, I was like, oh, will I be judged? Does it look nice taking my son? I don't know. Does it look professional? Yeah. And that's when Neera, who's the co-founder at Dustra, was like, you just bring him. It's fine, right? So now in our office, summer break is on. You see every day there is a kid rolling on the floor somewhere at Dustra office. And people enjoy that. People are very okay with that, right? And nobody is judging and evaluating him.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this has also happened for us over the years through the trainings and L&D work that we've done. So we've also done a lot of unconscious bias trainings with employees across levels, across teams. We've also done a lot of conversational focus group discussions on topics. Today we have groups where we have like parents group who rely on each other to share their challenges, because we also have parents with kids in different
age groups.
You also have a group of people moved into Dustra, very new to the city, right? I mean, that's also a big challenge. If I go back and if I look at the history of Dustra, we've made so much of progress in terms of not having anybody from tier 2, tier 3 cities. We used to have most of people from Mumbai or the metros, but today we have a lot of, I would say 50% of people who are coming from tier 2, tier 3 cities. And they have their own kind of platform. We also have close to 10% representation of LGBTQ community at Dustra. So they have their own setup. So it's a little bit of like you have your safe space to share and discuss what your experiences have been. And that, I think, has helped us. And I think organizations should think of working on that.
Yeah. There are two things that I remember from some of the stuff that you said. One about the amount of time that women spend on housework. So currently I have somebody looking after my mom at home for elder care. She comes for 12 hours. She comes in the morning at 8:15 and she's supposed to leave at 8:15. But by the time it's 7, you should see the stress she's under, because when she goes back, she cooks, cleans, does everything, prepares everything for the next day. And our husband is also working during the day, but he has no role to play in this whole process. And so often I'll tell my mother, because I understand that this is how I used to stress, because at the end of the day, I have to go back and do these 10 things. So if you can help her, do support her. And the one about bringing kids, I was in Ranchi for Pradhan workshop, something that we had designed. And one of the trainers, a young woman with, I think, a 7-8-year-old kid, she brought her child and she had the child in the room and he enjoyed himself. And the 50 people in the room also had a great time because she was such a great facilitator. We would have missed out on an opportunity if she had not been able to bring the child. So yeah, I think those are some amazing suggestions on what organizations can do to help their workforces. A focus for Dustra is on accelerating social change. I saw that on the website. How does this work? How does the work that you do internally inform or influence action within the broader social sector? Suppose we're speaking about the DEI stuff. Are you taking it out also? Are you doing it within? Are you asking, because you work with a lot of other organizations?
For us, a couple of things. All our programs, and specifically if I have to speak of a few programs, the Rebuild India program that focuses on providing unrestricted funding to smaller nonprofits that actually you have leaders who are actually from the marginalized communities that they serve. The Social Compact program that was actually an outcome of the second wave of COVID, when we saw and we all realized that the migrant population, the informal workforce in India, that's at the bottom of the pyramid, the challenges they had to face. So this program kind of works on enhancing and improving and providing them with the same equity and dignity that anybody else should have in India. Even the Dasra Adolescent Collaborative that I was talking about, right, that is today a very successful example of how collaboratives are built and how to achieve common outcomes for a certain underrepresented, marginalized, vulnerable community. How do you get different stakeholders in the sector to come together? So I think a lot of these elements are already weaved into the programs that we do. And even the programs that I manage and I run, which are around like executive education programs, we've always had 60% or more women participation there. We've always ensured that we have a D&I lens so that we are able to invite leaders who have not had the opportunity to attend similar programs in the past, representation from tier 2, tier 3, representation from northeast states. We don't even talk about this. This is so inbuilt into our programming that the minute we know that we're doing a program, there are these 5 things, 7 things that we will keep in mind. Forming advisory councils or committees, are we ensuring enough representation across genders, across cities, ensuring we don't only have funders and philanthropists on the advisory committee? Is there a fair balance of sector experts, of nonprofit leaders? So these are some of the things that have been really inbuilt in us. And one thing which I didn't mention, I should mention, is that at Dasra, we call D&I as GEDI, which is G-E-D-I, Gender, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And our GEDI journey, we've always said that we know this is going to be a long one. We know it's going to be an iterative one. Yeah. We at no point feel that we've achieved what we had set out to achieve. And we know it's going to take us a very long period to get there. But I think now that we've started talking and sharing about the work we've done with different stakeholders, be it the funders, be it the other nonprofit leaders, be it people like you, there has been a realization that we are going in the right direction. Yeah. And we're taking those small steps, but it is in the right direction. And that is what it matters. So now we're also thinking about wherever we get an opportunity to share our journey of how and where we started with the demographic surveys, with the visioning exercise, with the leadership team, with forming a GEDI council that consists of 15 people across organization, across levels, and doing their own pieces. We feel that now we kind of ready to also start encourage others to take on this journey.
Yeah. So how would you define success for this ambition for GEDI that you all have?
Yeah. So honestly, you know, we've gone back to the drawing board. We do that every year. Every year we're setting a goal, we're going back, we fail, we learn, we achieve certain milestones, we feel happy about it. So it's an iterative journey, to be really honest with you. I think a few things for us, we built our GEDI vision, and the vision is to embrace all dimensions of diversity across people, communities, and actively foster inclusion of the underrepresented groups, not only in letter, but also in spirit. That is the one guiding vision for us in all the work that we do. And then in simple words, I feel like when you hear anecdotes from people where, like, I was able to bring my authentic self to work, I feel belong at Dasra. I feel that somebody showed kindness and somebody was empathetic to the needs that I have. I think those actually become anecdotes of success for us, and that is what we value most. And of course, you have affirmative action when you said, okay, so many representation needs to come on board of people across caste, across religion. So you do all of that, but I think that to me is secondary.
That's a very interesting perspective. And also, I think what you've said about going back to the drawing board, it's the long run, it's where you learn, you fail, you do again, you try again, you engage with those people who you are trying to support, and make sure that you are continuously moving forward on the journey. And there may be some failures, like you said, and it's good to acknowledge those failures because you learn from those failures, right? On what not to do the next time. So that's very interesting to hear. What inspires you, Kavneet, the work that you do with Dasra every day? Campaigns, initiatives, people?
That's a good one. And as a person, I always look for inspiration close by. That's me. And I think a couple of things, I think I strongly admire everyday leadership that I see at Dasra. And that is something which inspires me. And this leadership is not just coming from the co-founders or senior leadership, but also from my own team members, right, in their own ways. And that is something which keeps me going. And we have this Jedi Council. We are around 15 of us. Every meeting that I walk out, I hear a perspective from somebody, which leaves me in awe and which makes me think that there is so much that we need to do and need to move ahead. I think that is something which really inspires me on a daily basis.
Everyday leadership, that's a new one, but that's how you find your inspiration all around you every single day. Any advice to social sector organizations keen to get started on the journey?
From my experience, I would say just take the plunge. Don't hesitate. Just take those small steps, because I know I've been on this journey. It can be very overwhelming. I've had sleepless nights where I'm like, oh, how are we going to move ahead? How are we going to achieve these goals? It's okay. It's okay to fail. It's okay to rise up again. But just move ahead and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things is that just get started. Don't wait for that perfect one fine day when you're going to get started, and collaborate and learn from the industry and who's doing well. I think there's a lack of collaboration and sharing of best practice. With the last question, Kavneet, we've been having so much fun. Time has really flown. So complete the sentence, I believe in.
I believe in celebrating differences and finding opportunities to learn from each other. And this is also kind of linked to your earlier point, Sudha, that we need to collaborate. There is so much that we can learn. And everybody, I feel, has a perspective to contribute. And they have something to add on. And you really have to look for it, right? If you have that open mind and if you're okay with the differences, you will definitely pick something new, and that will help you ahead on your journey.
I think there are two very important points that you made just now. One is that if you have an open mind and if you're okay with the differences, if we are accepting of the differences, that's amazing. So thank you so much, Kavneet, for this wonderful conversation. Really grateful to you for making the time today.
Sudha, thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.